Welcome to RC Hangar Time, a podcast dedicated to the radio-controlled aviation hobby, where each week, our hosts discuss everything from airplanes to helicopters and everything in between.
I hear ya.
All right, let's do this.
All right, you ready?
Yeah.
All right, this is episode number 62 of RC Hangar Time. We're back this week. I've got CPO with me, and we're going to find out what he's been up to. So what's up, man? What you been up to this week?
What's up? And, man, let's see. What have I been up to? I've been building my quad. I finally got all my FPV racing quad stuff from Ready Made RC. And also, and I mentioned this on the last show, I bought my Fat Shark Dominator V2 goggles. So now it's I'm in build mode. So I've been working, actually, it sounds like I've been working on it all week, but really I've been working on it for one day. So it was yesterday I got a little bit done on it, and I haven't done anything on it today. Nothing else through the week. That's it. I mean, really, I'm still recovering from Thanksgiving, I think. I'm not sure what's going on. The weather's crappy. It's cold and it's been raining all week. So
nice.
I don't really have anything exciting to talk about other than, you know, we'll talk more about the quad stuff later on, but that's kind of my new attention area right now. So
all right. It's an addictive thing, those racing quads.
Yeah, for sure. And I dig the build process. I like that methodical sort of assembly mind puzzle that goes along. It's one thing to build an ARF, right? That's like the planes. You know, some of them are a little bit more challenging than others, but there's a very specific assembly process where every component has a specific place. But you know, multi-rotors for some reason are fun to me because it's like an empty canvas. You kind of just do what you want. You get a frame and, you know, pick out some motors and ESCs and flight controller, and, you know, you figure out what wiring works best for you, and you figure out how you want to mount everything. So that's kind of fun, doing all that stuff. And so I've been doing a lot of Googling lately, looking at pictures, looking at lots of pictures on other people's builds and trying to see how they're doing things so I can, you know, try not to invent the wheel on my own if somebody's already done it.
Yeah, wait till you get to wiring these things. These 250 size quads are not fun at all to wire.
It can't be any worse than a 450 size heli.
Right, it's about the same. maybe close, you know, between a 250 and a 450 size heli. It's about the same.
What have you been up to? Anything exciting? It's been 2 weeks for you since we talked, so.
Yeah, I've been super busy. I was gone for about 4 or 5 days for Thanksgiving up at my buddy's farm in Idaho, and ended up taking my 250 quad and was doing a bunch of FPV, got a bunch of FPV video from up there that I had posted in the group.
Yeah, I saw that.
The Hangar Time group. Yeah, I had a lot of fun up there. I mean, the weather was great. I was surprised that it was going to be that good up there in Idaho. Usually it's this time of year, it's cold and snow, but you know, it was overcast but it was up, you know, 45, 50 degrees. So I was out there doing FPV all that I could, you know, practicing, flying through trees and buildings. And I had my first crash with a quadcopter that weekend, trying to fly through trees, which was an interesting. Yeah. Flying through that stuff is a little bit more complicated than, you know, just smacking a heli or an airplane around the air. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's funny because I drive around. I haven't built my 250 quad yet. I'm still working on it, but I drive around and I look around as I'm driving. I'm trying to look for flying locations, right? I'm looking for interesting places to fly FPV, and I'm kind of looking for that, like, you know, tree sort of a trail type environment. You know, I see videos of people online flying in parks where there's, you know, sporadic trees strategically placed and doing slaloms and things like that. But I'm just driving around and all I see is this like forest of tree limbs. I'm like, there's no way there's anywhere I can fly around here. It's just all, you know, I look, there's a little creek. I don't know how you guys say creek. And, yeah, I'm from Texas. We call them creeks.
Yeah.
But there's the creeks that run through, and you know, I'm thinking, well, maybe there's enough clearing of trees, you know, over the water. And I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna be a total idiot if I try and fly through that stuff. I'm gonna hit tree branches the entire time. So,
right.
I'm kind of looking for a cool place to fly.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I mean, we're doing the FPV racing. We've got a whole point series set up, and we have our first race scheduled for this coming Saturday morning, actually, if the weather holds out. And, you know, we've got our location and everything ready already for this week. But, you know, when I drive around, too, I'm looking for new places for new venues for our races. So I'm the same way.
That's cool. Yeah, I want to talk to you more about that. Maybe we can talk about that during the main segment. I'd like to hear more about how you guys are doing the FPV racing and the series and all that.
Yeah, for sure. We can definitely get into that. And I know there's a lot of interest. I've had people just out of the blue coming up and messaging me and asking questions about FPV racing and, you know, what to get. And even one of my local buddies that flies helis, he messaged me over the weekend saying, I think I want to get my son into FPV racing. You know, what kind of quad should I get him? So, yeah, we'll definitely get into that because that's kind of what our main topic's about this week.
Cool. All right. So the farm, did you drive or?
Yeah, we drove. I'm in Salt Lake City, Utah, so he just lives on the border of Idaho, so it was only about a 2.5 hour drive.
Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't far.
Cool.
Yeah, well worth it.
Nice. Well, I'll tell you where I wanted to go, and I didn't get to go, and that would have been a lot further south than than where you were. I wanted to go to Orlando. I was really missing the fact that I didn't get a chance to make it to the Orlando Heli Blowout this year. Of course, I've never been at all, but it's kind of like, you know, IRCHA, I made the decision, I'm going to IRCHA, that's it, I'm going to make it happen. And I made it happen. And then OHB's happening right now, actually, right? It just finished. It was Friday through today down in Orlando, and I've been watching vicariously people posting on Facebook their pictures from OHB, and I'm like, man, that would be so nice. It looks warm down there.
Yeah, I would love to go down there too. One year.
Yeah, one time. Yeah,
I think it's like higher on my list,
right?
What's that?
It's the second largest, just past IRCHA as far as size, right?
Yeah, it's a huge event.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully this year will be the year that I get to go to IRCHA. We'll see how it goes with, you know, vacation time and that kind of stuff. Because during the summer, it's kind of hard for me because I use up a lot of vacation time. And so we'll see. Hopefully I can make it one of these years.
Well, it'd be cool. I'm planning on going again in 2015. Matter of fact, I keep thinking about it. I'm like, maybe I should just go ahead and rent a hotel room just in case. I'm not sure
rent
I'm
going to
stay in a hotel, but, you know, just go ahead and get it blocked off.
Yeah. Yeah, if you don't stay in it, and if I go, I'll take it.
Yeah, there's a small part of me that kind of wants to hang out at the site, you know, either tent camping or, you know, get in with somebody who's got an RV or something. That might be kind of fun, but I don't know. I'll play it by ear, but I definitely plan on going to IRCHA. I'd like to try and make it just an annual event. Drag my son out there.
Right. Or we can just fly down there and crash Derek's house.
There you go. Yeah, I got a couple pals, Derek, and then, you know, Joe Maxey's not very far away.
Oh, yeah, that's
right. So, we could go just show up on somebody's couch one night.
Yeah, exactly. Happens. Hey, we're here for IRCHA. What you going to do about it?
Right.
Awesome.
Cool. Yeah. Have you been scouting the intertubes lately?
Yeah, I've been trying to keep up with stuff that's been going on, and, you know, just been focused on, with my spare time, hang out in RC Hangar Time and some other smaller groups that, for like the FPV racing and the quad stuff, because I've got a lot of stuff going on with that. But I did notice one thing interesting in the RC Hangar Time group that I wanted to give a shout out to real quick. Dan Lukowski, he posted some pictures of this new modified pits that he made. So it's a biplane pits, and he's added an extra set of landing gears to the top wing so that he can land it inverted.
That is absolutely crazy.
Yeah, and he's even got a video of it too, with some inverted practice on there too. It's really an interesting concept. I was like, when I first saw that, I was like, wow, that's wild. So I definitely have to shout out for that. That's by far the most interesting thing that I've seen all week.
Yeah, I can't say I've ever seen a plane of any type with landing gear both on bottom and on top.
Yeah.
But that is cool.
Yeah, for sure. That's
it looks really interesting. It's just, and he's got a picture. He's got the tail wheel on the, you know, on the normal, you know, underneath the fuselage on the tail, but then he's got one on top of the vertical stabilizer. So when he's inverted, he's got a tail wheel. That's just awesome.
Yeah, it looks like that'd be a lot of fun and something creative for sure. I like those kind of projects. Even if they don't work. But this one obviously looks like it works from the video.
Yeah, that's crazy. Hey, so something I saw on there, two things. One is one you posted. I was going to ask you what you thought about it. But the first one, I don't know if you saw Joe Estes. He's from Ready Made RC. He's a member of the RC Hangar Time group now. And he posted his 250 size X8 quad. Where he's got two motors, you know, facing up and then, or I mean, sorry, four motors facing up and then four facing down.
Right.
And that looks interesting. I saw a little video he posted on that thing. That sounds like an angry little monster. But that's pretty cool looking.
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
Is that factory or is that custom?
I haven't seen one like that. So that looks like it's custom. It looks like he's got taken a 250 quad and taken and added four extra arms and put them on, like, say my quad, the arms are on the bottom. It looks like he's just inverted the motors on the bottom and added arms to the top plate and then motors going upwards. So
that's crazy.
Yeah, we should definitely
get him on to talk about it. I'll ping him and see if we can get him on the show sometime. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, for sure. It'd be interesting to see. I'd like to see some video of that too. That looks nasty.
Yeah, totally. So the other thing that I saw on there was something you posted. I was wondering what you thought on this Parrot Bebop thing. is this the budget version of a DJI sort of a, you know, anybody can go play with and get in trouble sort of a thing?
I don't know. Did you see the price on it?
No, I didn't look at the price. Is it horrible?
It's in the thousands.
Are you kidding?
No. It was I can't remember. It was like around $1,100 or $1,200. But it comes with the controller and the monitor and the quad and all that. You know what I mean? So it comes with quite a bit of stuff.
Okay, so let me take that back then. I don't think it's a cheaper version of the DJI Phantom problem, but I think it's going to have similar consequence, right? But the cool thing, I watched a demo of this a long time ago. It must have been last year sometime, where like the CEO or somebody, some bigwig dude at Parrot, kind of introduced this for the first time on video. And it really is kind of cool. But for those of you who aren't familiar on the Parrot Bebop, it's an iPad that mounts to it, and then it's got these dual controls.
It looks like it's – I'm not quite sure exactly. I didn't really read too much about it. I didn't have time. I kind of just posted it before the show we got on. I saw it, and I saw it throw it up before the show. So I didn't really get to read too much about it. But it does look like it's something – you know, it's got two hand controllers, so you've got it looks like two joysticks. You got one in your left hand and one in your right hand, and that's how you control it. So it's not it's really unorthodox. It's not like an actual transmitter. Then in between that, it's got a monitor.
It's like an airplane yoke, right?
Yeah. And then it's just got little thumbsticks for it. So that it's an interesting concept. So we'll see how it works out.
Oh, you know, I'm looking. I clicked on that link that you posted, and I'm looking down somewhere. I managed to find this interface thing, and it's got an adjustable dock for smartphones and tablets. So, okay. So it is an iPad I'm looking at probably on there, but you don't have to fly with an iPad. You fly with whatever smartphone you have. It looks like the antenna. It says a dual band 2.4 and 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi MIMO antenna with a 2 kilometer range. So it's – how are they getting 2 kilometers out of Wi-Fi? That's crazy.
I'm not sure. That's weird.
But anyway, I just – I kind of saw that and thought, oh, no. Here we go. But I don't know. I kind of dig that stuff. I can't afford any of it. And maybe that's why – maybe I'm just jealous. Right. Maybe that's the problem because it is kind of cool looking.
Yeah, it does look cool, but it's nothing that I would ever want. You know, I usually post these kind of things that I find, like these weird off-the-wall stuff like that, just kind of get some activity going in the group and get some discussion going and see what people's thoughts are on it for those that haven't seen it yet. So, yeah. But it's – you know, it's definitely directed to a different kind of market than what I'm in. So, you know, I'm into, you know, build my own stuff, put my own motors in it, and build it the way I want it, and be able to do what I want to do with it, not just be limited in out of the box, you know, type multi-rotor or even heli or anything.
Yeah, that's the same way. Like I mentioned earlier, I enjoy the build process. So, you know, buying it, charging a battery, and then going and flying around isn't as exciting. And I do that. I got a few little toys, little micro quads here and there, and even one with a little camera on it. And you know, I don't mind it. I like it. It kills time, you know, when I'm not able to go out and fly the bigger stuff. But it does. I lose interest over time. And you know, the name of this says it all. The Bebop. I just feel like I'm bebopping around and then get bored. You know,
bebopping around.
I think that's a horrible name. The Bebop. Yeah. It's just.
Well, it's coming from a parrot that had the AR drone. I mean.
Yeah. Well, this is Bebop drone. I mean, we had to keep the drone name in there for sure.
Yeah. Otherwise, you wouldn't know what it is.
Yeah, but I had a friend who had an AR drone, and he said it was boring, you know, after a while, and the range wasn't that great. It was, you know, Wi-Fi. Again, it uses Wi-Fi for the communication, and it just he said he got bored with it.
They're great for kids and stuff, but nothing hobby grade or nothing like, you know, the quads or stuff that we have.
Yeah. So anyway.
Yeah. That's about all I've got for this week. Should we move on to our main topic?
Let's do it.
All right. So this week's main topic, if you haven't guessed already, is going to be mini quads. We're going to talk about, you know, well, maybe not even quads. I'll probably throw in some hexcopter stuff in there and other stuff. So we're going to talk about the smaller stuff, the 250s, the, you know, even the new Nano FPV quadcopter that's out right now. And talk about some frames and electronics and flight controllers to put in this. Because, like I mentioned earlier in the show, I've been getting a lot of messages lately and a lot of interest in my area about people that are interested in FPV racing, since we've kind of got a whole FPV racing scene going on. We've got a whole point series going on, and we're going to have a race every month and like a championship. So, you know, we'll dive right into it. I know CPO's got a lot of stuff to go over. He's got a quad in the mail that he's been working on, and I'll let him take over and see what he's got going on and what frame and where and the who's and the what's.
Yeah, so that's the case. I've been knee-deep in parts, which is pretty awesome. So for those of you, I don't know, I'm sure I've talked about it before, but Ready-Made RC – hooked me up with some gear to build a racing quad and give them my thoughts on it and do some videos. So I've been very fortunate to be able to do that, and had an opportunity to get a Drone Frames DRQ250, the Mini D. You might be familiar with it, and I got the G10 version, and you know, I wouldn't mind talking about that a little bit more because I know you fly a lot of carbon fiber stuff.
Right.
I really had the choice between G10 and carbon fiber when I was talking to those guys about it. And, you know, I just, a G10 felt right to me. And I, you know, I mentioned a few reasons in one of the videos I posted. Somebody else actually, so I mentioned the reasons for G10, you know, no problems with RF interference at all. I mean, RF interference is a non-issue with G10. Carbon fiber is known to block RF, but I don't know if it's enough to matter in the way you guys normally fly racing quads. The other thing is it's non-conductive. So electrically, we can do things with G10 like what I'm doing in this build is, you know, fasten PCBs right to the G10 and not have any problems, not need standoffs or anything else, because electrically it's isolated. The G10 doesn't conduct any of the current. But it is a little bit heavier than carbon fiber, not much in this particular frame, 15 or whatever, 20 grams, I forget what it was. But it didn't seem significant at all to me. And then somebody else mentioned a point from my video in a comment that I hadn't really talked about, which is durability. And the assumption was that carbon fiber is probably going to be more durable in a crash than G10. And I quite frankly don't know. I've never flown a G10 anything. I've flown wood. Actually, my tricopter's got a G10 body panel, but it's indestructible no matter what it's made out of probably. But are you familiar with the difference in G10 and carbon fiber as far as strength in crash situations?
Right. So, you know, I'm familiar with a bunch of materials because I am a machinist for my job. So, but mainly I work with aluminums, and I've worked with fiberglass and that kind of stuff before. But carbon fiber and G10, there isn't going to be much difference in strength as far as I know. I don't know how with these smaller stuff. I haven't really done too much with like the thinner frames and that kind of stuff. I know that the fiberglass is gonna, or the carbon fiber is a little bit more flexible, so it might be more impact resistant. And the G10 is gonna be a little bit stiffer, so I don't know how that's gonna handle an impact.
Interesting. Okay. We'll see. I'm sure I'm going to put it into the ground more than once, so we'll see how well it does. I mean, the cool thing about the DRQ 250 and a lot of similarly designed quad frames is they have the exchangeable, you know, replaceable arms. So, you know, a large majority of your crash cost from a damage perspective is probably going to be arms, if anything.
Right,
and that's, you know, and your most expensive piece of electronic gear, of course, is probably going to go, because that's the way the world's economy works. But
right,
yeah,
and that's why you see a lot of these frames now. They're coming out with thicker arms, so they're upgraded arms, or you know, 3 or 4 millimeters instead of just the 2 millimeter like the plates.
Yeah, and that's how this frame comes. It's got thicker arms than the rest of the quad, so it's the dirty and clean segment design with vibration dampeners between, which is really cool. But yeah, it's got, I think it's got 1.5 millimeter plates, and it's got 3 millimeter arms. Actually, it's got the top plate is only 1 millimeter. It's got a super thin top plate because it's basically just a holding platform for some of your oddball electronics and stuff. But the actual components that make up the body of the quad are 1.5 millimeter, and then like I said, the arms are 3. So I think it's going to hold up well. I mean, besides the fact the DRQ 250 is kind of a proven design.
Yeah,
that one's always interests me, as well as the one piece quad from Crashcast. I don't know if you're familiar with that quad, but
yeah, the OPQ.
Yeah,
and you know, that's what I was going to mention with these frames with G10 and carbon fiber. I don't think that there's going to be much difference in a crash, especially in a hard crash. Either way, something's going to break in a hard crash. I've seen carbon fiber break in a hard crash. I've seen G10 break in a hard crash. So either way, it's pretty much sixes. You know, there's definitely, you know, pros and cons to each one. You know, like you said, carbon fiber is lighter, but it conducts electricity, so I had to be super worried about everything that I put in because I didn't want to fry my, you know, $60 immersion RC receiver. So I made sure that it was covered and wrapped, and it wasn't anything touching the carbon fiber in there, because I've seen, even from Immersion RC's fan page, that somebody posted one of theirs would just went up in flames because they just slapped it onto a carbon frame.
That's right. Yeah, I saw that. They were had a problem with the receivers burning up or something. I had a freaky time once with my 500 heli, where I was getting some sort of conductivity, but I ended up rebuilding the thing and you know, never had the problem again. But my boom brace mount, where the metal end of the tail boom brace mounted to the frame, was heating up like hot to like burn your finger hot to the touch. And I attribute that to some sort of conductivity. Something was making an electrical connection that was radiating through that carbon fiber, and then that metal piece was heating up. And I never did exactly figure out what it was. I think I ended up having it was after a crash. I think I had a defective ESC that was shorting somehow to the carbon fiber. But I mean, it was a good reminder to me that that stuff will conduct electricity, because there's no other way that would explain why that connector was getting so hot that it would burn your finger if you touched it. And that's on the bench, but it was crazy. So yeah, that's kind of cool. And then, you know, the other thing is I don't have to worry about, I mean, I don't know where I'm going to mount my receiver antennas, but at least I know I don't have to worry about it laying against the frame at all, because I know that's one of the challenges with carbon fiber is you've got to get it off the carbon fiber and, you know, get it away from it. But with this G10, I can, you know, if there's a convenient spot to lay it along the G10, that'll be perfectly fine. So that's kind of cool to not have to worry about that. But
yeah.
Anyway, so the DRQ250 is what I'm building. I'm putting the Emax MT2204s on it. They're 2200 or 2300 kV motors.
Nice. You'll like those motors. I have them in my quad.
Oh, cool. I know a couple people that are running them, but are they fairly new?
I'm not sure. I'm just barely getting back into the quad scene, so I don't know if they've been around for a bit or not.
Okay. Anyway, I'm kind of interested in trying. They seem to be good balance of power and cost.
Yeah,
which is always a nice thing. And now I'm going to be running the counterclockwise and clockwise versions. Do you have the two that are opposite, or are you running just all the same thing? And then
no, I did the same for my quad. I got counterclockwise two of them, and then two clockwise ones.
This is the first time I've played with that on motors. You know, obviously the props are going to be set up differently depending on whether or not you're running in a counterclockwise or a clockwise direction. But this is the first time I've played with motors that actually are threaded on the prop shaft differently.
Yeah,
it's just kind of a cool idea.
Yeah, it's just to keep the props from flying off, but I've really never had too much of an issue with it.
I never have either. But hey, why not? I mean, if they're available.
Yeah, and they're not any more expensive, so.
Right. And somebody mentioned to me, well, you know, now you've got to keep, you know, spares of the different versions. And the reality of it is if you lose a counterclockwise motor and you put a clockwise motor in its place, it doesn't really matter, because it's not the thread pattern that determines which way the motor turns. It's how you connect it to the ESC. And then you just, you know, that it just becomes a standard motor with a standard prop at that point. I mean, I don't see where it's really a big issue. But anyway, but I'm going to run those and some Emax Simon series ESCs, the 12-amp ESCs, which have what I believe is a modified version of Simon K, but not the actual Simon K firmware. Although I'm told, I'm not sure exactly. I know that they come with the ability to have BL Heli on there, but I don't think that they're BL Heli by default. But anyway,
do you need a programming card to program these ESCs?
I don't know how to program them, actually. I haven't even looked at it. I wasn't going to. I was just going to slap them on there with whatever they're running. So I hadn't even looked at it that far.
Yeah.
I'm told they're going to run just great out of the box, so I didn't even bother looking. My assumption is they're going to have to program through – the only way to program them is through the controller cable, right, where the so I don't know if there's a card or what for that. But that's that. I'm going to run the Naze 32, the Acro.
Nice.
Are you running any of those?
Yep, I have a couple of Naze 32s. And they're pretty solid right from factory settings. I mean, the first time I set mine up on my 250 quad, super simple, plugged it into base flight. I mean, I had to do a little bit of programming for it because I run a direct satellite. I don't run a receiver, so I have a satellite, a Spectrum DSMX satellite soldered directly to it. And it's bound that way, so I don't have to have an external receiver. Nice. So I had to do a little bit of programming for that and, you know, adjust the endpoints and all that. But after I did all that, set the motor directions, program, you know, set the ESCs and all that, took it up and flew flawlessly, just rock solid from the get-go. I was very, very impressed. But,
nice.
And it's pretty
work really well.
Yeah, they're very quick and agile too. So that's what I like about it too. You don't have to. I mean, if you want to make it flip on a dime, you can. I mean, these things are really nice, especially if you like to fly in rate mode.
Yeah, that's cool. So I'm not running a satellite. I am going to run a full receiver. I'm going to run a Free Sky. DR4-2, which so for some reason I kind of have this thing going where for my helicopters, I'm particularly the bigger ones, you know, Futaba all the way, and I think I'm going to eventually convert some of my smaller helicopters like the 500 and the 450 to Futaba. But for my multi-rotors, I just tend to really like the Free Sky, my Tyrannus, with those because I can program all kinds of funky options and, you know, I don't know. So and I found a video where somebody connected a DR4-2, which is a telemetry model of a 4 or I believe it's an 8 channel through PPM. Anyway, to a Naze 32 and was able to get the voltage telemetry back to the transmitter. So
nice.
I'm hoping I can do that where I can hook my receiver voltage telemetry capability up to the Naze and get that. I've got as a backup, I've got the old standby, you know, voltage alarm that I can plug into the battery just in case, but I'm going to try and see if I can get that to work.
See, with the 250 stuff, and you know, I'm old school too. I mean, I've never used one of these voltage alarms, and I don't want that extra weight anyways, especially on a 250 racing quad. I want it to be as light as possible. So the way I learned to fly was, you know, you take it up, you set a timer and you check your battery to see where you're at, and you would keep adjusting and, you know, you do that for 10, 20 flights and keep adjusting until you get it to where you're consistent, whether it's 4 minutes or 5 minutes. And, you know, I just run my timer every time.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way I do my helis. I don't know why with the multi-rotors, my tricopter I run off of a timer. So, I mean, yeah. I guess it just depends. But
and I've got my 250 dialed to where I set my timer and it goes off and I land, and every time I come down at about 30 to 25% left on my LiPo, which is where I want them to be.
Right.
So, and that it's right around 5 minutes where I'm at.
That's cool. Yeah. I don't know. I like having voltage telemetry just in general, knowing, you know, where I'm at. But you're right. I mean, a lot of times I end up just flying off the timer anyway.
How are you going to get that voltage telemetry in your goggles? How are you going to be able to look at your controller?
It's audible. Piranus, man. It'll talk to you.
Okay. See, that's so the other thing. I'm not all up to date with the Tyrannus and all that. I'm stuck with my I have an 11X and I fly that with everything. And I've thought about getting a different, you know, transmitter to take out with me for when I'm doing FPV and I'm out in the dirt and that kind of stuff. But I just can't bring myself to do it. I'm so comfortable with my transmitter that I can't be switching back and forth. You know what I mean? It wouldn't feel right for me to fly with a different controller.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I kind of wish I standardized on one, but, you know, I haven't. My planes, I'm flying half the time. I'm flying a Tactic 650. So I'm totally screwed up. I'm like grabbing an Android phone 1 minute and an iPhone the next. It just,
that's really weird.
Okay with it. But yeah, so on the Tyrannus, my plan is to set it to, when the voltage gets below a certain level, I haven't really determined in my head what level that's going to be, but not right away, not full battery, but you know, maybe when it gets down, you know, 3/4 of a flight, you know, I want it to start calling out my voltage every, you know, 30 seconds. So I can kind of, at least initially, until I figure out how much time it, you know, I have to play with.
Right.
But I can program it to, you know, if below, you know, X volts, start telling me the voltage, you know, every N number of seconds and, or something like that. So, you know, I'm going to play with a little, but that it is kind of a bonus to have audio because I don't have to look at anything. I can just be flying and then hear, you know, where I'm at or you know, whatever, but
yeah.
You know, and I don't like that on the helicopters, to be honest with you. I've set up telemetry on the helis, but because there's such, you know, a massive current draw when you're giving it full cyclic, that it always trips the voltage alarm because, you know, the under load, the voltage will sag, you know, horribly, especially depending on the battery you're using. You know, sometimes I've upgraded. I'm not flying with such cheap batteries anymore, but even the cheap batteries, will sag horribly, but, just doing maneuvers, you know, I'm not a brilliant 3D pilot by any means, but just simple flips and rolls and, you know, punch outs and things like that. I'll set that, the telemetry alarm off. And, you know, it'll tell me my voltage is low or voltage is critical. And then when I, you know, stabilize and get back into a hover, I'm fine. So it does kind of get annoying with helicopters to have telemetry just because it's so dynamic. But I think on the multi-rotors, it's probably going to be a little more stable because I think the voltage draw is a little bit more consistent. I may be wrong.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. I don't mess around too much with telemetry either.
Yeah.
I just go fly.
Just go fly.
All right.
So, anyway, that's that. That's the important stuff that are going in the build. I've got some other stuff. Like I'm putting in, you know, the NAS 32 into a little case and, you know, try and protect it. But the other thing I'm doing, which I kind of wanted to talk to you about and get your take on, is at least initially – I'm putting on the 10-degree motor mounts. Have you seen those?
Yeah.
So I know we had talked in the past. I think we talked in the past about the 10-degree tilt on the motors and why that's a value or why not. But they are ReadyMade RC sells a 3D printed motor mount for this particular quad that just basically will push your motors to 10 degrees and they give you a little bubble level so that you can set your flight controller level because you can't level it flat. You have to level it at 10 degrees so it knows what normal is. But anyway, I want to try those out. I think that might be kind of interesting. But I was curious if you happen to fly with anything with tilted motors at all.
No, I don't. Everything's just flat plates on mine. So I've seen these, but from what I've noticed while flying – and from my videos, you know, I've had it pegged just straight as fast as I can go, you know what I mean? And I really haven't noticed any difference in the video of field of view of missing anything, you know what I mean? So I don't know, maybe these will make your quad go faster, So I'm curious to see what your take will be on them as well when you get them going. But I haven't had a chance to mess with them or feel the need to yet because I haven't done too much research on them yet.
Yeah, so there's two different areas that this is supposed to address or is expected to address, and that is one of them is the camera view, which I don't know, you know, if you like right now my tricopter, I've got the camera mounted flat, you know, perpendicular to the frame, and you know I see more ground than sky, but it doesn't really bother me too much. I mean, it's not like I can't tell where I'm going.
Right.
But this is supposed to address that and give the camera a little bit more of an upward angle during flight. But the other thing is, supposedly it, you know, gives you a flatter profile when you're in forward motion so that you're, you know, not as, don't have as much surface area of your quad frame, pushed into your airflow. So in theory, it should give you less drag, but you know, right. I don't know how much of a difference it makes. And is it even noticeable at the speeds we're dealing with and the size of the small thing? Right. I mean,
right.
If it was super huge, obviously you might experience, you know, 10 degrees of tilt might feel like a lot. But I don't know on this size, how much I'm actually going to feel. So I kind of want to find a way to, I haven't quite figured out how I'm going to do it yet to objectively try and measure the difference between 10 degree tilt or not. But I'm going right now with the theory that there may be some noticeable improvement, but I don't have any experience with it yet to know for sure if it's actually valid or not.
Yeah. And how much noticeable improvement as well.
You know, right. I mean,
if it's going to be that much to where it's needed or not, depending on the situation that you're using it for.
Yeah, and there's a little cost. I mean, they're not super heavy, and when I say cost, I mean by weight. And you know, there's some dollars associated with it as well. I think they were like $30, but
yeah.
You know, they're not that heavy. I mean, the 3D printed stuff is really ultralight stuff, so it doesn't add a lot of real significant weight, but there is a little bit. So I'm just curious to see if the benefit is worth it.
Yeah,
but that's why we play. We got to see what works and what doesn't. So
exactly. Yeah, I'm interested in these as well. I mean, if it's a noticeable difference and these are going to be, you know, a need for racing, yeah, I'll definitely get some too, because you know, of course, in racing, you want any kind of an edge or advantage that you can get.
Right. But, you know, a lot of the newer commercial quads and tricopters and hexacopters and all that, you know, a lot of them are starting to come out with the 10-degree tilt. I think the Gemini, the TBS Gemini, comes with a 10-degree tilt from the factory. So, I mean, you would think that – I mean, it's one thing for, you know, guys in the forums to be chit-chatting about their little custom mods that they're doing to their multi-rotors, and everybody jumps on the bandwagon and does the same mod. Whether or not there's any real value or not, there's a perception of value.
Right. But and I'm sure these companies have done their R&D and know that, you know, maybe like the TBS Gemini, I'm sure that they've done their research and development and figured that this was the best option for that Gemini.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, if you're in the business of putting out products, you're going to do a little bit of testing and research on your own, or at least something. I don't think that TBS, for example, would put out, you know, a multi-rotor with a 10-degree motor tilt just because that's the popular thing right now if it really didn't add any value.
Right.
They'd probably be more likely to come out and say, we didn't put it because it doesn't do anything. So so I'm hopeful that there's actually some real value and it's not just, you know, a sugar pill.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I'm doing the build. I've got and I got goggles. You weren't on the last show, but I talked to Darren a little bit about that. But I did finally get the Fat Shark Dominator V2s, so I'm excited about that, and that will it's kind of the 250 quad is going to be sort of my my maiden flight with goggles as well. So it's going to be fun all around experience. Yeah. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah, usually like those. Have you turned them on and checked them out yet?
I turned them on and looked at them. I haven't actually plugged them. I haven't connected them to a transmitter yet. So basically just turned them on and looked at the blue screen or whatever it is that's inside there whenever there's not a signal.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm curious to of how those goggles are, because I've just got the Predator V2s. So, but I've liked them. They've been decent for me and for what I'm doing.
Now, do those have the DVR in them?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so. That's why I went with the Dominator, is I wanted the DVR, and first of all, I couldn't justify the cost of the HDs, particularly when I'm not actually transmitting HD video right now, and I don't know how long it's going to be before I actually get to a point where I can afford to transmit HD video. So if I'm sending myself a low def signal, I don't know if it's worth having goggles that can process a high def signal. So anyway, that kind of made that easy for me. And then I wanted to be able to record the actual flight video, and I looked at external DVRs and good ones, you know, ones that are designed for FPV that will be able to handle, you know, signal loss and a lot of interference or whatever that you would get in a normal FPV sort of a scenario. And, you know, you're looking at $100 for a good DVR. And I'm like, well, you know, so if I get goggles without that, then I've got to buy that on top of it. And I don't know what you use. I'm actually kind of curious about that as well. So anyway, when I did the math, I'm like, you know, it's got a DVR in it. That's, you know, bonus. Plus, it's got the modular bays. I'm not running a head tracker now. Who knows? Maybe one day. But for now, I don't really care about the head tracker. But, you know, the modular receiver bay means that I can run 5.8 today. And, you know, next week, if I decide to switch to a 1.2 or 1.3 system, I can put that in there or, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
so.
See, that's what I want, because I'm kind of – well, you're not really limited at 5.8 with the Predators. They've got a jack where you can plug in your video from an external receiver, but then you're still connected to wires. You're not completely wireless like you are with the modular stuff. So,
yeah,
that would be the main reason.
There's a trick to that I had considered when I was looking at the ones without a modular bay, and that would be you could build a ground station that basically is a repeater and receives on 1.3 from your aircraft and then transmits through another 5.8 transmitter, and then you watch that feed through your goggles. So the ground station would basically just repeat the signal. It gets a little bit more complicated, but that would be a good way to be wireless and still on a different frequency.
Right.
And you could have your DVR on there and everything as well. But do you do any DVR?
No, all my video just comes from onboard the aircraft. So I run my GoPro 3 on my mini quad, and I don't do it. I haven't really felt any need for the DVR in the goggles, because I don't have telemetry or OSD or any of that. So, and the video kind of gets spotty with the goggles, like depending on where and how far out you're flying, and you know, it's not really a very crisp video in my I mean, it's good enough to see where you're flying, and you know, you can tell where you're flying, but it's definitely nothing compared to the GoPro 3.
Right. Yeah, I mean, definitely for, you know, like YouTube flight video, you want to use a high def camera anyway. And send that and you're right, it's kind of boring to look at without OSD. I mean, OSD is what makes FPV video interesting in a lot of cases.
Right.
When you're recording the actual feed. And I've heard the arguments of, well, you know, the cool thing about recording your video from your video feed is you've got access to it immediately, because it's being recorded real time at your ground station, which in this case is going to be my head. But you know, if I lose my aircraft, it goes down. I can always pull that SD card out and then take a look at and watch the video and see exactly where things are in case I have a problem trying to locate it.
Yeah.
Now on a 250 quad, the reality is probably you're not going to have that much of a problem locating it because, you know, you're fairly, you know, close in, but, you know, I'm looking in the future, you know, I'd like to get more involved in FPV, fixed wing flight. So I, you know, in that case, I am looking at an OSD and something with a little bit more range to it that it would be kind of nice to have the video of if I ever went down, or when I get an OSD, it would be kind of cool. I like those videos on YouTube where you have like the HD video, you know, side by side with the OSD, or maybe the OSD's in a picture in picture that shows, you know, that view. I think that's kind of cool stuff. So
yeah, that's always fun too.
I just figured eventually I was going to want to do something with it, even though if it's not now. And you're right. I probably, you know, I'm not going to be putting an OSD on the 250 quad. So
no,
I do want to record video, but I don't want to record, you know, transmitted low def video. I want to record high def video from the quad itself. So since you brought up your GoPro, I'm kind of thinking right now I have two options for video. One of them is my GoPro 3, and the DRQ250 has a cool little camera plate that comes with it that is designed for mounting a GoPro right on the front, which you know, can't beat that. But I also have a 808 number 16 camera, one little keychain cams, and I'm trying to decide if I want to mount my GoPro or mount the 808 camera. And I'll qualify that by saying I'm also going to have the Sony CCD camera for the flight video. So I'll have a separate camera that will be just for sending the signal back to the goggles, but for the HD recording. And I was kind of wondering if the weight of the GoPro was going to be a problem, but you know, I'm building an FPV racer, but it's not like I'm on some racing circuit right now where I'm, you know, trying to shave seconds here and there. So yeah. I don't think I'll even notice the difference, to be honest with you, if I put a camera on the front.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I run, you know, like you said, a separate FPV camera. This is a small camera that transmits my video, and then I have my GoPro on top of the plate. That plate is actually more geared towards the Mobius. It's a little bit longer and narrower than the GoPro. So, and it's got the little rubber shock absorbers. But I just took my GoPro and strapped it right to the middle of it, and I haven't had any issues with it. I mean, I can hear it whistling, you know, like it's creating some drag.
Nice.
But I really haven't noticed any difference flying with it or without it. And for me, if I'm going to fly FPV, of course I'm going to record it. Why would I go out and fly FPV and not record it? You know what I mean? So for me, FPV is kind of flying with a purpose. I like to record it. I like to edit my videos and have fun with it, make a cool video and post it on YouTube and share it with my friends and the groups and that kind of stuff. So the other option, I don't know too much about the 808 cams. I know that their quality is a little bit lower than the GoPros. But the other option is the Mobius. A lot of people run the Mobius, and they're fairly cheap. They're, you know, $60-$70. So there's that option as well.
Yeah, you know, I looked at the Mobius when they first came out. Matter of fact, when I bought my 808 cam, it was a decision between the Mobius and that one. Mm-hmm. And at the time, though, the Mobius was in its very infancy, and there was a lot of uncertainty as to how well that was actually going to work out.
Right.
Turns out, you know, I should have gambled on it because it turned out to be very popular. But I went with the 808, which was, you know, $20 cheaper. I think it was quite a bit, you know, cheaper. But you're right. I mean, I looked at the Mobius recently. A lot of people are out of stock of them. They're that popular. They can't get them in stock.
But the other thing is too that you gotta be aware of with the Mobius is that if you're going for high quality, I think that they're still only at 720p, right?
Yeah, 720.
Yeah, and where the GoPro, especially, I know that the GoPro 3 is 1080, so. But where it comes to YouTube, I don't know. I mean, I've seen people's videos. I don't know if it's just where they're editing them or what, but the colors don't look right from the Mobius, from what I've seen from like a few of my friends posting videos and stuff. The colors just don't seem as crisp and clear. They seem a little bit redder or bluer. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Compared to the GoPro. I mean, some people don't like the GoPro because of that wide-angle lens, but I'm so used to it, I don't care. It doesn't bother me.
Now, do you record in narrow or wide or medium?
No, I record in wide 1080p.
Okay. See, I was actually – that's one of the things I was thinking about with the difference between the GoPro and the 808 for me. The 808 is fixed, and I got the D lens, which is the wider angle lens, and it's fixed. I can't do anything about it. But the GoPro, I can set it to record narrow field of view. And I was kind of curious if narrow would be better for FPV video or wide or not. I mean, because it doesn't matter. My flight camera is going to be entirely different anyway, so it doesn't change my view in the goggles.
I would just go with recording in wide, because every screen that you watch it on is going to be a wide screen.
Yeah.
Even your phone, you know, where you can just turn it sideways in landscape mode and it'll fill up the screen. So I always record in wide 1080p.
Nice.
So.
Cool.
Next thing, you know, I wanted to bring up was, you know, a lot of people, like I said, have been asking about what to get into and that kind of stuff. I wanted to mention real quick that I've been kind of pointing people towards a deal on Massive RC. They have an Emax 250 quadcopter, and it comes with the same components that you have. It comes with an Acronaze, comes with the Emax 12-amp speaker controllers, and it comes with the same motors, the Emax, what were yours, the 2200 KVs, the 2206?
They're 2204s, 2300 KV.
Yeah. So it comes with those same motors, and they've
so
got this whole,
me I did good, huh?
Yeah. Well, they've got this whole kit with the frame, for $169.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. On Massive RC. So that's where I've kind of been steering people to. It's especially that don't want to spend a bunch of money to get into it. Cause there's debt. I mean, you could spend, you know, hundreds of dollars just on a frame itself. Like, you know, you could look at a Blackout 250 quad where you're going to spend, you know, $150 just for the frame or somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
They've got the integrated PCB boards and all that too.
Right. But that's a challenge. Particularly, you know, I'm in the same exact boat where I'm just getting into this right now, and I'm making decisions. You know, I'm blessed in the ability to do some reviews for ReadyMade RC. But, you know, when I'm looking, I'm like, man, there's – you can buy a frame for $15 or one for $250. It's like it's quite a broad spectrum of offerings out there. So
right.
And you know, quite frankly, I don't know where the difference is in all of them.
Right. And there, I mean, it just depends on, you know, the quality and that kind of stuff, and the name. You're going to pay for the name. Of course, that's always with all kinds of aircraft and this kind of stuff in our hobby.
Sure.
So, but I'm actually, you know, I have a Blackout quad. It's a Blackout 250, and I like it. It's really nice, but I'm considering for my next quad, I'm actually considering about getting a different one for racing. Is, have you heard of the MB Epic 260, the 280-260?
I have not.
It's from Multicopter Builders. It's actually designed around a GoPro, so it doesn't have that mount up top. It's actually on the bottom down low where you mount your FPV camera. Your GoPro will actually sit in there, and this thing is a pretty sweet little quad. The guy that builds them, he's got some amazing videos where he's just screaming across stuff and doing some crazy stuff with these things, and they're super durable. One of my buddies got one, and pegged it right into a metal pole the other day, trying to fly through a an awning. Didn't even break a thing. You see the Mobius go flying, and he just walks over, picks it up, and starts flying again.
Huh.
So
that's crazy.
Yeah, but they're quite a bit more. I mean, for an R for this with the frame, the motors, and the speed controllers, and the flight control board, but these ones come with T motors, so you get a little bit better motor. And I can't remember the ESCs, but I know that they're a little bit better too. But you're looking at about 350, 375 for this ARF.
Wow. You know, it's not really that bad. That's pretty darn good.
No, but compared to $169 for an ARF, you know, it's
It's
double. So, but this, I mean, if you get a chance, check it out. The MB Epic 260 280. So they have two versions. They've got a 260, 260 millimeter from motor to motor mount. And then they've got a 280 version. It's based off the same frame, just longer arms. So the 280 version has longer arms, and you can run 6-inch props instead of the 5-inch props.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I'm looking at that for my next 250 and my upgrade 250. Because, I mean, I like my 250, but it, I don't know. There's some little quirks about it that I don't like, and I think that with this Epic, I think it'll be a little bit more epic FPV racing.
So what are the quirks you're noticing?
You know, it's a little bit slower than I like. I mean, with my GoPro, because it's, like I said, it sits way up top, and I really don't want to buy a Mobius, so that's kind of my deciding factor of going with the MB Epic 260. And there's, you know, there's just things about it that it's got the three plates on it, and they're just narrow, really skinny. There's nowhere to mount your electronics. The MB Epic is a little bit different design. It's not two rectangular plates slapped together. It's got a little bit better design to it, where it looks like the mounting of the electronics will be a little bit easier, because my stuff is pretty much just all crammed in there wherever I could fit it. This stuff, you know, with the MB, it looks like I can make it a little bit cleaner and place stuff a little bit better and not have to worry about things being so close or tight and wires wherever they are or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's actually one of the challenge areas I'm facing right now with my build, is trying to figure out how I want to lay out the ESCs, because there's a couple options I have, but none of them are like perfect. Like, this is the place for the ESCs without a doubt. There's a little bit of compromise in every location, and it's like, you know, if it was, you know, 10 millimeters longer, then it would be no issue. You know, it'd be a done deal. But, you know, it's just like there's a little bit of compromise. And these Emax ESCs seem to be a little bit longer, longer and narrower, I think, than some of the other ESCs that tend to be, you know, more, I guess the opposite of that would be shorter and wider. But
right.
So it just means I have to think about what I want to do and where I want to mount things. So I definitely feel you there.
Yeah. So are you going to mount yours on the arms or inside the frame?
I'm going to mount them inside the frame.
Yeah, that's where mine are. But it's a pain if you need to get in and out of there to do any kind of work on it.
Yeah, it's going to be tight. But there's only four nuts that hold the clean section onto the dirty section on this quad. So four nuts, and the entire top half of the quad comes off. And then you've got the PCB and the ESCs.
Yeah, and that's where I run into problems too, is any kind of maintenance or whatever on mine. I've got to take off so many nuts and bolts off the bottom, and once you do that, all the little spacers for the arms fall out, and yeah, it's not fun taking and putting that thing together.
Yeah, I can imagine. Cool. So what else? What else do we want to talk about?
You mentioned you wanted to hear about our kind of racing series that we've got going on, our structure.
Right. Yeah, how does that work? Because I don't know anybody around here that does FPV racing, but I imagine once I get mine actually functional and running, there's going to be some sort of a draw to figure out how to get things going. And I know people who have FPV quads, and so I'm like, okay, if we kick off racing, how are we doing it? So what are you guys doing out there?
So I came up with a point structure and kind of a base rule structure for our FPV series, because it hasn't been done here before. So we've got a group of guys going, and I kind of just sat with one of my buddies who is actually a mechanic for a race team out at Larry H. Miller Motorsport Sports or Park Sports Sports Park. I say that. First time that three times fast.
No, anyway,
his kids, and he runs a team for shifter carts. You know what the shifter carts are?
No, I have no clue.
Oh, well, they're basically go karts, but they have a 125 or 250 cc motorcycle engine in them.
So, nice.
Yeah, they're extremely fast. They'll go from 0 to 100 back down to 0 in like 10 seconds. I mean, they're stupid fast.
Wow.
Yeah.
I like stupid and I like fast. So
right?
That's a win.
So he's constantly going to all these races. That's his job. He goes to all the races. He's part of the pit crew. He takes his kids there, and he's part of a team, and he knows all about racing. So me and him kind of got together, and we talked about some points and how we wanted to run it, and I came up with some structure for it to get it going. So basically each month we're going to have one race, and you're going to earn points for a point series. And we'll run, you know, four or five races for the winter series. And cause it'll be a little bit shorter than the other series, and whoever has the most points wins. So our point structure is going to be, you know, first place we'll get 10 points. Second place we'll get 9 points. Third place we'll get 8. Fourth we'll get 7. Fifth we'll get 6. And anything after fifth place will get 5 points. So 6th through 10th or 12th or how many people, they'll get 5 points. And then you'll also will run 3 races per event. So you'll have 3 chances to post your times, and we're going to do heads up racing. So there'll be 2 people on course. There'll be 2 spotters. And then the spotters will also be timers, because we're thinking safety first. So each person is going to have a spotter. And that spotter will also be timing. So whoever, it'll be just basically like racing cars. You know, we're going to run for 4 minutes, and whoever puts the most laps in the fastest time, that you win that race. So if you win 3 races in a row, and if you have a total time of, you know, say 16 minutes, then you're the winner for that race. You'll get 10 points. But we're also going to give people 1 point for just starting a race, because I know, you know, some people may not finish a race or whatever, and we still want to be able to reward them with some points.
Right.
So there's that. And then we're also talking about in the series, like, if, you know, you miss one race, but you come to the rest of the 4, you'll be able to drop that one and it won't count. Or you'll, you know, if you come in to all the races and you have one really bad race, you crashed and you had to go home, you'll be able to drop that one too, so that you're still in it to win it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, nice. No, I know a lot of competitions that will allow you to drop your low score. So
right, and
that's cool.
That's kind of what I was thinking too, because, you know, there's other obligations or crashes. You know, you may race for one lap and crash your quad, and you're broken that race. And we don't want to have somebody, you know, if say you were the point leader and this is your last race and you crash on your first lap, you know, that would really hurt your point standing. So we want to be able to help people out with that.
Now, how many crashes do you guys see between aircraft as the race is occurring? Is it a lot, or is it
I don't know yet. We haven't had our first race yet, so
that's one of the things that kind of scares me is you know, racing, you know, simultaneously with other pilots means the chances of destruction go up, which is, you know, fun as a participant, you know, or a spectator, I guess.
Right.
But, you know, it kind of sucks if you're just trying to run a circuit and somebody gets in your way and crashes you.
Right. And that's why we're going to go with just 2 people at a time racing. And, you know, me and my buddy that helped me put this together, we went out at this track that we're going to be racing at. for this first race, we went out and practiced on it, and we ran back to back packs racing together with each other for hours. I mean, we had to have at least 10 or 12 flights in that day, and we never ran into each other. We'd talk to each other and say, "Oh, I see you. I'm going to go above you, or I'm going to go below you, or I'm going to go here," or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's cool. So, if you guys are communicating like that, that helps a lot.
Yeah, that's kind of what the spotter's job is going to be in the races too. You know, and that's the other thing that the spotter's going to be for too, is that I forgot to mention, if you blow, we're going to have gate markers per se, or turn markers. Well, I'm going to get some PVC flags or poles to set up for each turn, and you have to fly through them so that you can't cut a corner or blow through a corner or whatever and cut the course. But if you do miss that and you go, like if you come on the inside of a turn and you miss that, say that gate marker or whatever, then we're going to add 10 seconds to your time.
Okay.
So that's kind of what the other job of the spotter is going to be for too, is just making sure that they're staying on course, not cutting corners. And if you do happen to miss a turn or whatever, you know, then we'll add 10 seconds to your time for each time that happens. You know what I mean? So right. It could get pretty, some of these courses are pretty technical and that kind of stuff. So it may happen. It may not. It depends on the kind of flyer you are.
Huh. That's cool. Yeah. I had wondered if it was better to have people fly individually and basically do lap times, you know, kind of like more of a bracket racing sort of a platform where, you know, it's basically you and the clock and then, you know, tallying up scores after the fact. But two right. doesn't sound like it's too bad, especially with two spotters as well. And if people right. are communicating well, that should work well.
Yeah. And that's the thing. We didn't want to do just time trials. We wanted to be doing some actual heads up racing. So we figured two to start would be the best. And it's the easiest for frequencies too, you know, FPV frequencies. Cause like me and my buddy, we changed frequencies to be on the opposite ends of 5.8 and we didn't have any issues with video. So it seems to work well. I'm just kind of leery to see. I mean, if somebody else is like on 900 or 1.3 or 1.2 or whatever, or 2.4, I don't even know about 2.4, that may not work, but we may add in three or four, just kind of see how it goes. But as far as we're going to start the first race, we'll see how it goes, just with two heads up at a time and just do time trials that way.
Nice.
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot of fun, man.
Yeah, I'm super stoked for Saturday to come and get this first race in. I mean, since I'm heading it up and I'm doing all the paperwork and all the times and the spreadsheets and all that, it's going to suck for me because, you know, it's going to be a lot of paperwork and times and writing down times and keeping track of stuff for me, but it'll still be a lot of fun just to get out there and race some FPV and against some other people and some friends. You know what I mean?
Yeah, nice. Don't you have like copious amounts of free time to do all this stuff?
Oh yeah, I've got endless amounts of free time. Let me tell you.
Yeah, you and me both. The good news is I knocked off some of my honeydews today, and my wife has been on me to get some Christmas lights put up outside. So I'm not. I won't say I'm completely done. But I knocked off a good half of my requirements with that. So, time. Nice. I just wish I could buy more of it.
Yeah, me too. Because geez, from Monday night till Thursday night, I'm booked solid with, you know, I'm coaching a youth basketball team, and we have practice Monday, Tuesday, then games on Thursday, and It's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun. It's a good experience for me. I'm glad that I'm a part of it. And then on Wednesday night, I'm in a bowling league, and so my nights are filled.
Yeah, I know how you feel. I think right now my Wednesday nights are free, but outside of that, I've got something planned every single night of the week. I think Wednesday is my free night.
Nice.
So gotta love it. It's all right.
Yep. It's nice staying busy rather than sitting at home being bored, right?
It's for sure.
Idle hands are of the devil or something like that, right?
Something like that, yeah. Yeah, I definitely don't – it's been a long time since I had the days where I just veg out and sit and watch TV on the couch for hours on end or, you know, whatever. It seems like I've always got something to do. And even right now I've got – a crap ton of videos to edit. I've still got Apollo 50 build videos to work on, and I've got RC car videos to do. So I'm behind, and unfortunately, getting a new quad box of parts doesn't help me, because it just puts me further behind. But right. That's all right. This winter time, when it's nice and cold outside, and I don't want to go outside, I can sit and edit video.
All right. That's what winter time's for, is build time. Speaking of which, it's kind of relevant to our topic. Did you see my post, what I posted of my new motors that I picked up?
Yeah, I was going to ask you about those. What are those for?
So I just picked up 6 T motors. They're 1806 2200 kV T motors over Black Friday. It was Black Friday that I got those. I got a screaming deal on them because normally they're $50 a piece.
Wow. What'd you get them for?
They're about $28 a piece.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah, so I saw those and I jumped on them. What I asked the fiance for Christmas was a hexacopter frame. So I'm getting a 300mm hexacopter frame. It's similar to the Blackout hexacopter. But it's not a Blackout. It's kind of a clone. It's coming out of China, so she ordered that for me.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's the other thing. We're gonna be racing hexacopters in our racing series. So I wanted to get that and get that going for next season, hopefully.
Are you gonna have different brackets, like the hex bracket and the?
Yeah, we've got different classes. So we've got a 250 stock class, and that's basically your 250mm. It can't be no longer than 260mm from motor to motor, and you have to run 3S LiPo and 5-inch props max. And then we've got an unlimited class where it's up to 300mm with no limit on LiPo or props. And then we've got a bigger class. We've got a 450 and above class for people with that want to race 450 size quads or whatever. Nice. But right now the majority is 250 quads. There's two guys have a 300mm hexacopter, and then me when I get mine. So that'll put three of us with a 300mm hex.
Nice. Well, at least I can come out and race my 680 hexacopter.
Right.
Anytime. There's a bracket there's a class for that, right?
Exactly. Anything you want, you can come and race.
Nice. Yeah, I've got the micro quad. It's not FPV though. Oh, speaking of micro FPV quads, did you get one of those yet?
No, but I keep seeing people posting these videos of them flying these Blade Nano QX FPV quads around their house, and I'm like sitting here in the winter time and it's cold outside, and I'm like, man, I need one of those. So yeah. They're about 150, 160 for the bind and fly. I'm very tempted to go and pick one up, but I keep telling myself I can't. It's Christmas. I got to buy other people's stuff.
Yeah, I know. It's horrible, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, $150, and especially now that I've got goggles, that looks a little bit more appealing because I can just, you know, it's a 5.8 system on those, right?
Yeah. So it'll transmit to Fat Shark and Boss Cam, from what I read. But here's my question. I couldn't get a figure out how they're recording this. Does it come with a recorder, or they just have a DVR?
Or are they sending it to goggles like my Dominators that have DVR?
That's what I'm wondering, because I don't know if it's got the ability, like an SD card on the quadcopter for recording, or are they just recording from their goggles with a DVR?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know.
Because doesn't record, then I don't want it. Like I said, I have to have it for a purpose.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at a video right now, and the video is clearly the transmitted video, not from the camera.
Right.
Because it's got glitchy. That kind of flicker. Yeah.
Yeah.
My assumption is they're recording at some sort of a base station or a goggle.
Yeah, which wouldn't be too hard to set up. I mean, I guess. I don't know.
But that is cool. And flying around the house. Oh, man.
Right. Yep, there's tons of options out there for mini quads and FPV quads. You know, just lots of research to do, and hopefully we've helped narrow some stuff down and give some good pointers and tips on what to start out with or what to look for and that kind of stuff.
Or we've just blown people's minds and made it even more difficult.
Exactly. And that also happens too. There, you know, you're set on something and then you hear about something else, you know, oh, that MB Epic 280 sounds pretty awesome. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Dude, you got me looking at YouTube videos on the Nano FPV. And this guy is flying around inside his house. Then he leaves, goes out the window, is flying around the outside of his house. Then he comes back in through a window.
There's, they are very cool. I'm very tempted to go and get one. So
you're a jerk. I'm going to spend $150 on one of these things thanks to you.
I know.
Somebody opens. Oh, he hits a sliding glass door. That sucked.
I've seen them bounce right off the ground, right off poles, and they just keep on flying, too.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so I may have to go get me one, too. I just got to figure out how I'm going to record the video to post it. And then maybe we should have some RC Hangar Time contests or something with these kind of videos. Set up some kind of obstacle course so you can come up with the craziest obstacle course for these things in their house.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think RC Hangar Time should buy us all, each of the hosts, an FPV quad.
Right.
And we'll be set because, you know, we'll pull into to Big Daddy's pockets.
Yeah. I know, right?
It's funny.
It's all the money that we're bringing in.
Or Horizon Hobby, give us a call.
Yeah, we'll definitely do some reviews and some testing on the podcast for you.
It's funny. Awesome. If only it were that easy.
I know, right?
Yeah. So cool. Good talk. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have anything else to add. Do you?
Nope. Pretty much tapped out, I think.
All right. I think that'll do a wrap.
You've been listening to RC Hangar Time, a podcast dedicated to the RC aircraft hobby. For more info, you can go to our website at www.rchangertime.com or look for us on Facebook at RC Hangar Time. And if you have any questions, please feel free to email us. For Mike, it's mike@rchangertime.com. For Wade, that's wade@rchangertime.com. Dustin, you guessed it, dustin@rchangertime.com. And for TJ, it's crash@rchangertime.com. What the heck? Anyways, again, thanks for listening and keep flying.